Hey, everybody. This is Rob Ryersey. This is the Common Good Podcast. We're going to talk about the news of the day and take a look at it from the perspective of politics and the implications of it and what is going on in the world and what it means for all of us who care about, I don't know, the future of democracy and and where we're going to be as a country headed into the 2022 midterms and then into the presidential race in 2024. And maybe you're thinking, I don't even want to be thinking about that yet. It seems way too early. Yeah, it probably is way too early. But the reality is that we got to think about it. We got to talk about it. Hey, listen, my friends, you know, we've been talking about on the podcast about the We the People ride. This really kind of amazing thing that Vote Common Good has sponsored, a ride from San Diego, California to St. Augustine, Florida, a bike ride spanning over 1,300 miles. Is it 1,300? Is that right? Is that the right number? I don't know. A whole bunch of miles across the southern border, 66 days. And our fearless leader, Doug Padgett, the executive director of Vote Common Good and my co-host on this podcast, has been out riding that bike and making that trip and has really done kind of a remarkable thing, collecting stories of what is taking place at the border. And that came to a close yesterday. Producer Dan was there on the last day. Dan Dietrich was there. My wife, Vanessa, was there on the last day. Spent the last week. I think she ended up biking about 500 of the miles through her couple of weeks on the tour. But really a remarkable thing. And I want to thank everybody who, you know, has kind of been along for the ride, so to speak, and heard us talk about the bike ride. And, you know, we're going to be sharing the stories that have been collected along the way over the next few weeks and trying to help you understand just how important it is that we have a common good border and immigration policy and in all the ways that that what we've got currently is not that. And it's a really important thing. But today we're going to talk about some political comings and goings. Already today, it's been kind of an active political day, and there's things that are happening in the world. Just as kind of a small note, maybe you heard that Senator Patrick Leahy is going to be ending his time in the United States Senate. He is the longest serving senator currently in the United States Senate. He has held his seat for eight terms. Eight times six is what? 46? This is the sixes and the eights were always tough for me when it comes to the multiplication tables. But it's been a long time that 48 years that he's been a United States Senator. And, you know, is the Senate President pro term and, you know, someone who has been around for nearly 50 years. You know, seeing it all. You know, so Vermont is going to be, for the first time in a very long time, choosing a new senator to represent them. You know, when I hear this and I think about, you know, our current leadership, you know, Patrick Leahy, 81 years old, President Biden, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, so many of our leaders are, frankly, really, really old. I remember a few years back, one of President Trump's State of the Union addresses. He was, you know, he gave the State of the Union, and then the response to it was given. The Democratic response was given by Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. And I remember sitting watching it and setting aside all of the content that was shared, setting aside everything that was, you know, said and who I agreed with and who I disagreed with. I was just really struck by the age of our leaders, that we had so many people in their, you know, mid to late 70s, their early 80s, making the decisions for all of us. And I think, you know, I tend to think that it would be good for us to have a broader mix of ages. You know, there's so many ways that our leadership in Washington, D.C. is homogenized, and as much diversity as possible, having a representatives that actually look like America, you know, I think is really important. And you know, Patrick Leahy retiring after nearly 50 years in the United States Senate just kind of, you know, highlights that. Another thing in the comings and goings of politics, have you heard the news? Beto is back. Beto O'Rourke, former congressman from El Paso, Texas, former Senate candidate, former presidential candidate, you know, kind of professional campaigner at this point. Beto O'Rourke is running for governor of the great state of Texas. He's going to be taking on Greg Abbott, who is, you know, certainly made a name for himself as you know, one of the most kind of outspoken anti-common sense governors in the United States, as we deal with so many things from the pandemic to natural disasters to, you know, I don't know, reproductive justice and women's rights and healthcare, all of these things. And Greg Abbott has shown himself to be one of the leaders of the, you know, far right move in the Republican Party, the far right movement in the Republican Party that is, you know, so endangering the country. And Beto O'Rourke is standing up and saying, "Hey, I'm gonna take my shot. I'm gonna be the one to bring down Greg Abbott and move Texas in a new direction." I personally think this is a really good thing. You know, you might know that Michael McConaughey, all right, has been flirting with the idea of running for office, and he was kind of seen as, well, you know, the big name person who could possibly challenge Greg Abbott. But with Beto jumping into this race, it's going to be interesting to watch. Now, let's be honest about this. Texas is still a red state. Many of us were hoping that it was moving more purple, and we're really hoping that Texas might even be in play in 2020. And as it turns out, that, you know, wasn't really the case. And on top of that, Greg Abbott has raised more money for his campaign than any governor in U.S. history. $55 million in his campaign war chest. That's a lot of money to spend on campaigns. You know, it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be interesting to see what can happen. Now, Beto is starting with name recognition. He is starting with national support. And he's starting with a whole lot of momentum from people who are energized to bring a change to the leadership in Texas. And so, you know, we wish Beto well. He has been unsuccessful the last couple of races that he's run. I personally think his presidential race was a bit of a mistake. And, you know, claiming that, you know, he was born to be president in a newspaper or at a magazine article, that's kind of a paraphrase, but it came across that way, you know, was a bit of a mistake. But, you know, fingers crossed that Beto is going to be able to galvanize the people of Texas. Additional political comings and goings, Steve Bannon is hopefully going to prison. Steve Bannon has surrendered to the federal authorities after he was indicted for contempt of Congress. You know, if you were me, were called to testify before Congress, we would have to show up, we would have to testify under oath, and we would have to do so honestly. And just like in a court situation, if you were called to testify, you have to show up and you have to tell the truth. And if you don't, you will be held in contempt of court and charged with perjury if you lie. Why Steve Bannon and a whole host, Mark Meadows, and a whole host of other Trump insiders have decided that they can just, you know, blow off Congress. I'm like, nah, I'm not interested in that. It's ridiculous. And I am really, really happy that the January 6th commission has is issued subpoenas, and the Justice Department is enforcing those, and Steve Bannon has now been arrested by the FBI. Hopefully he will be tried and convicted for his blatant disregard for law and order. And the other thing is hopefully that this will show that the January 6th Commission is serious about finding out what happened and making sure that justice is adjudicated in this situation. You know, if you listen to this podcast, you know that over time I have said I am not ready to move on from January 6th until justice is done and justice happens. What happened on the during the insurrection on January 6th is one of the biggest crimes against our government, our democracy, who we are as Americans that we've seen throughout the history of our country. And we witnessed it. We watched it happen live on TV and social media. And the people who organized it, the people who instigated it, and the people who participated in it need to be held accountable for their crimes. And Steve Bannon is one of them. Mark Meadows is one of them. And ultimately, Donald Trump is one of them. And I'm really, really happy that that Steve Bannon has now been arrested. Hopefully this means that others will not make the really stupid choice that he has. Others who have been refusing to testify before Congress. Others will see the error of their ways, the foolishness of their ways. And this will mean that they'll show up, tell the truth, and we can move towards justice. But frankly, I'm not holding my breath. Are you? Probably not. Because this is a group of people who has consistently proven the fact that they are willing to flaunt the law and do whatever they want to do. Hopefully the law will catch up with them. So don't hold your breath about that. But hopefully, hopefully we'll get some video of Steve Bannon in a perp walk, because that, would be kind of amusing. See how many, I don't know. So let's just imagine for a second. Imagine Steve Bannon in the orange prison jumpsuit. The question becomes, how many jumpsuits does he have on, right? Because have you noticed this with Steve Bannon? Have you seen this thing where he wears 2, 3, 4, 5, 87 shirts all at the same time? Multiple polos. You remember back in the 80s when we would do that and we'd pop our collars? Steve Bannon apparently thinks that's still in fashion. And continues to do that, but usually it's not pastel colors like we had in the 80s. So anyways, enough about Steve Bannon fashion, and let's move on to another really kind of disconcerting story, and that's the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse. What took place in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and the Black Lives Matter protest that took place last year. That was happening all over the country, and it was tremendously important that people give voice to the frustrations and the anger that they had. In the backlash to that, Kyle Rittenhouse illegally obtained a firearm, crossed state lines, went to a city that was not his own, and took the lives of other human beings, and is now on trial for that. And if you've been following this, you know how disconcerting this trial has been for a number of reasons. Disconcerting because of how the judge seems to be conducting himself. Judge Bruce Schroeder seems to be acting in a way that, I have never seen a judge act. We've heard this phrase, whenever there's a Supreme Court justice who, comes up for confirmation, we hear a phrase, and it's the phrase judicial temperament. Judicial temperament. You've heard that phrase. It speaks to this idea that we expect our judges to conduct themselves in a certain way, to have a bit of decorum, to be thoughtful and reflective and non-emotional, to be as objective as possible. And what we have seen out of Judge Bruce Schroeder is someone who seems angry, yelling and freaking out. And there's something about it that just doesn't smell right, just doesn't feel right. And there's been a lot of concern about the prosecutors that they have been bungling this case. And Kyle Rittenhouse's attorneys today have filed an official motion for a mistrial. You know, and who knows how Judge Bruce Schroeder will rule on that. The whole thing is just really deeply concerning. And in the context of, hey, there seems to be two judicial systems, one that works for white people and one that works against black people, this trial does not seem to be doing anything to help address that perception, show it to be a misconception, even though I don't think it is, but in fact is reinforcing that narrative and showing, you know, hey, we got a problem with our justice system. And what is taking place here with Kyle Rittenhouse is an example of that. If you are white, if you have money, if you're a man, there is a, you know, if you're a rich white guy or the son of rich white people, you know, you're going to have a different experience in the justice system than otherwise. And so just watching this with a really heavy heart. Well, you know that one of the real challenges we face as a country is over, you know, recent years and currently is the rise of white Christian nationalism. And over the weekend, an event took place in San Antonio, Texas, where a church, Cornerstone Church, which is pastored by John Hagee and his family. You know him as one of those televangelists, those TV preachers. If you don't know, if you can't picture him off the, you know, immediately, you would know him if you saw him. He's one of those guys. His church hosted the Reawaken America conference, and there was a couple of really disturbing things that came out of that that we want to talk about today. One of them came from former General Mike Flynn, who you know, served time in jail because of, you know, his criminal activity at the beginning of the Trump administration. Now has become, you know, regarded as one of the leaders of the QAnon movement. People have thought that he is Q, though I don't necessarily think that. He has, you know, pledged his allegiance to QAnon along with his family, with the, you know, where we go one, we go all pledge that posted online. He's, you know, he's been a leader in the fringe right wing, the far right wing fringe conspiracy theory crowd. He's been a leader and a hero to them. And at this Reawaken America conference on Saturday, he said something really, really disturbing. I don't know if you've heard this yet or seen this video, but here we go. I'm gonna play it for you now.
And they're talking about the United States of America. Talking about the United States of America, because when Matthew mentioned it in the Bible, he wasn't talking about the physical ground that he was on. He was talking about something in the distance. So if we are going to have one nation under God, which we must, we have to have one religion, one nation under God and one religion under God, right? All of us together, working together.
One religion? One nation under God, one religion under God. America should have one religion? Really, really disturbing, right? Mike Flynn suggesting that the very basis on which the United States was founded, freedom of religion, because for whatever reason it might be, the pilgrims, our founding fathers, those who came to these shores did so as a result of, you know, what they thought was religious persecution in their time. They wanted to be in a country that did not have a state-sponsored religion, and the United States was founded on that principle. And here's Mike Flynn suggesting that the very thing on which our country was founded, you know, Now, here's the dirty little secret. If it's not even just one religion, like, hey, Christians are good, probably I'd be willing to bet that Mike Flynn would, and others of his ilk would, you know, would have a problem with, you know, Catholics, Roman Catholics. He'd certainly have a problem with me, who identifies as a progressive Christian. What about our Jewish neighbors, our Muslim neighbors, our Hindu, Buddhist neighbors? What about Mormon or Jehovah Witness or atheist or agnostic neighbors? They're no longer welcome in the United States of America? Come on, Mike Flynn. Like, the very thing that our country was founded on, you're willing to throw out the window for the sake of power for the people that you want to have power. Another disturbing thing happened during this same conference, again being hosted by a church, Cornerstone Church in San Antonio, Texas, pastored by John Hagee. Led by John Hagee and his family. At some point during the service, during the conference, people on the stage began leading the people filling up the church pews in a chant. And again, remember, this is not a Sunday morning service. This is taking place on Saturday, but it's in the church building. It's in the church pews, and the big chant of "Let's Go Brandon" broke out. Here's that video. Yeah, the now, I don't know, ubiquitous and kind of annoying, more than kind of annoying, frankly, "Let's Go Brandon" chant. Now, if you don't know what this "Let's Go Brandon" thing is about, this is, you know, Christians, conservatives, right-wingers, thinking that they're clever. It goes back to a NASCAR race where there was a crowd of people chanting "F Joe Biden," but using the expletive. And, you know, and during, while that was happening, there was a live interview taking place with the winner of the race, of that NASCAR race, whose first name happened to be Brandon. And the reporter, maybe misheard the chant, maybe trying to cover up this idea that these good church-going people, you know, salt of the earth Americans, were chanting "F Joe Biden," "F the President of the United States," live on television. Tries to cover that up, or maybe she mishears, and she says to this NASCAR driver, she says, "Hey, they're chanting, 'Let's go, Brandon.'" And so, you know, Joe Biden's opponents have jumped on this as their secret code to express their distaste with President Biden by, instead of saying what they really mean, "F Joe Biden," they, you know, are clever about it. And so they say, "Let's go, Brandon." A United States congressperson has said, "Let's go, Brandon," on the floor of the United States Congress, which is where we're at in our country now. And here is a group of Christians chanting about their hatred for the President of the United States. Listen, didn't Jesus say, "Let your yes be yes and your no be no"? Like, just say what you mean. You know, you're being pretty clever about this, and like, wink, wink, nod, nod. Ha, 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 ha. Aren't we in on the joke? Come on, have the guts to say what you really mean. Go ahead and chant it. Chant it in your church building, "F Joe Biden, F Joe Biden." And while you do so, completely ignore, I don't know, all those verses from Romans 13 that you like to quote when we criticize Donald Trump. But here's something else. So part of what we do with the work with Vote Common Good is we help candidates connect with religiously motivated voters. We help particularly Democratic candidates for office, you know, understand the political and religious landscape. And one of the things that we talk about is that we, you know, we've got two parties in our country. We've got the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, but we really have four electorates, at least four electorates. There might even be more. And what we see is that, you know, within that, and I don't want to go into this, you know, real deeply, but what we talk about is that this idea that there are those voters who have kind of progressive postmodern values, and there are those voters who have modern liberal values, and they tend to vote Democratic, but they're kind of two very different electorates. And we see that conflict within the Democratic Party at times, right? And then there are those voters who have modern conservative values, and there are those voters who have strict traditionalist values. and they vote out of that. And you can kind of see that. There's kind of that tension that exists at times between those who might be fiscal conservatives and those who might be social conservatives. And you see that. And you see, like, okay, like, you can kind of understand that tension, and we've seen that tension. What we've observed, and we talked to candidates about this, what we've observed over the last several years, really before Trump, but the rise of Donald Trump's presidency has really accelerated this. We have seen a fifth group emerge, and that fifth group has essentially authoritarian values. And the things that matter to them are not character, honor, loyalty, those traditional values. What matters to them are not proper role of government and the Constitution and democracy, those traditional modern conservative values. They're willing to sacrifice all of that because the only thing that matters with this emerging fifth electorate is winning. And you can assassinate verbally, rhetorically, your opponents. You can literally resort to violence because the ends justify the means. Power is the thing that happens. Power is the only thing that happens. Winning is the only thing that matters. And you're willing to sacrifice other things for the purpose of that. And Mike Flynn and this crowd that has been radicalized by him and others are willing to sacrifice the very foundation of our country, things that in the past they would have been the biggest cheerleaders of. Our founding fathers and what were the principles that we are, that our country is based on, and things like morality and decency. This is the crowd of people that we expect to value those things. And you look at them and you scratch your head and you wonder, why don't they care about these things anymore? And the reason they don't care about them is because they have sacrificed those values they once held, and they have been radicalized to join this authoritarian group where the only thing that matters is winning, and who we are as a country doesn't matter. Decency to the president of the United States doesn't matter. Living according to biblical, you know, what you would perceive as biblical truth doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is winning politically, beating our opponents. Christian nationalism, white Christian nationalism, is so dangerous because it is aligned with authoritarian values that challenge not just who we are as a country, but challenge democracy. And that's why we've got so much work to do. That work continues. It continues today on November 15th, a little less than a year out from our next election. We're going to continue to do that work at Vote Common Good in so many different expressions, so many different ways. And I want to encourage you to continue doing that work wherever you are in the world. Things feel dark at times. Let's bring the light. Feels like evil is on the move. Let's bring the good. Until we talk again next week, my friends, appreciate you. Encourage you to keep doing good in the world. Have a great day.